Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, today I'm recording from a picnic area up at the reservoir. If you're local, you'll know where that is. Highlight. Anyway, for a Tuesday, which is the day that I'm here, it's surprisingly occupied. The picnic area, all the little picnic tables are occupied, but I did find a little place where the water, which is very high right now, is lapping at the trees and the ground above the water level. And I will also say that if you stand still here very long, you have some of those great big ants that will be investigating you, but that doesn't bother me. Anyway, we're going to be talking a little about Father's Day, because this episode is coming out at the end of the Father's Day weekend, and we're going to be talking about fathers in nature of different sorts. And first, we're going to have a episode of Desert Oracle Radio. This episode was released June 7th, 2024, and it's called Slumgullion Stew. And Ken Lane, the producer, has this to say: we're throwing everything in the hobo stew tonight. Desert animal antics, Wild West extravaganzas, history's mysteries, William Shatner shot up into space, etc., etc. The soundscapes are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and the rest is by your host, an underpaid mail order professional, Ken Lane. Onward. Enjoy.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and it's that time of year when a person needs to be careful, needs to take care. The days are long and hot and hazy. Another summer to endure. It's easy to lose your determination in such conditions in a dreary little town, nobody on the streets after dark, nobody except for a couple of hot rodders racing each other, or more often racing themselves, come midnight. You can hear them from one end of the valley to the next. How do they never crash into anything? It just eats at your nerves, this kind of weather. And what's worse is you know that the hot weather is a month or two away. What's bearable when you're alone under a cottonwood and the breeze is absolute torment when you're trying to get yourself from point A to point B and see ugliness all around. Dead eyes behind the cracked windshields of erratically piloted vehicles, the never-ending trash piles, empty strip malls of crumbling stucco and blank plastic signs. Long stretches of highway with nothing but human-built desolation. The ragweed's coming up too. Best to stay on the property in the company of the creatures who've survived this aesthetic apocalypse. The trio of young rock squirrels who've decided to base their lives around the big water bowl I leave out for the birds, well, they are starting to question their initial enthusiasm for life. One of them, the smallest of this bunch, has taken to stretching out on its belly on the shaded patio, legs splayed out, eyes half closed. It looks sort of like when the cartoon coyote falls off a cliff and lands flattened on the desert below. Oh, and how they love that cold water. As soon as I dump another tray of ice cubes in the bowl, they are all around it. They love the ice-cold water. One of these bozos tried to stand on the unstable iceberg created by a clot of 6 or 7 ice cubes in the middle of the bowl and fell right in. And ran like hell, but was back again in a few short minutes, drinking away. The morning doves give themselves freeze brain. It's comical to watch too much cold water, and then they walk around in a tight circle with their head sideways. A minor inconvenience, an inconvenient truth. Then there's the little bully bird and his growing harem. 6 or 8 babies, too. He keeps watch over them all, shooing the big spiny lizard away when it crawls up too close to their nest in the eaves. Last week, I saw him up on a dead Joshua tree branch with 2 females. And he was taking turns with them for all to see. The king of the dirty little birds. Sparrows, I mean. Nature's pest. And then, by 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon, they are all gone. Even the plump cottontail that likes to nap on the doormat. And I'm still here. Trying to type something, trying to get these mail orders out before I give up and set fire to the house and get behind the wheel and head for the mountains. Higher mountains than the ones around me. These baked brown mountains that offend the soul in this sort of weather. Higher mountains, yes, because it's cooler, sure, but mostly because it's so far away. So far away, and less people, at least in the direction I'm going. A good day is a day without encountering another human soul, especially when you're outside walking, working, or sitting beneath a pinyon in the afternoon, dozing like a cottontail on a shady doormat. Inside, it's true, people get lonely. Can't help it. We are, according to the textbooks, social animals. Takes 15 years for babies to grow up. And then, absurdly, we insist they spend another half a decade or longer as children when they should be out raiding the monasteries with their siblings and cohorts. Another season in the longboats. But outside, even in the supposedly lifeless deserts the green energy companies like to destroy, there is life all around, the best company you can keep. Just listen for the ravens.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Oh, and there are the Corvid cousins, the troop of scrub jays, and the desert willows up the wash, nature's weirdos. Glimpses of snakes, of lizards, and the chattering call of the gamble's quail, a half dozen little ones scurrying around below. The distant call and sometimes close-up appearance of the various local coyotes. Now and then, late in the day, a bobcat crosses the trail just as I come around, and sometimes there are black-tailed mule deer in the shade of a willow or a big juniper, still as stones. The usual wildlife of the West if you've got some open space around you. The mountain lions I mostly know by their signs. The scat on the dirt road, the occasional late night shriek. And the discarded legs of prey that trail dogs take such delight in discovering amongst the thick brush. Bighorn sheep legs or mule deer legs, the only such animals we have around here. Now these rock squirrels are desert squirrels, squirrels of the Southwest. They don't even need water beyond what they get from the various seeds, grasses, fruits and bugs that they eat. But these young squirrels, they are fools for cold water. They just hang around that bowl for half the day. And now I cannot replace that bowl with a proper bird bath, even if I wanted to, because what will the squirrels and the bunnies do? It has been a while since the Old West was a real time. The Wild West. The frontier. It was mostly gone by the time it became a national sensation during and immediately after the American War between the states. And by 1880 or so, it was just about gone for good. Save for the Alaskan territory, which Russia had sold to the United States in 1867, and which for a quarter century afterwards was much like it had been for many thousands of years. A pre-industrial human society within a landscape and climate dominated by the whims of wild nature. Alaska wasn't even a governed territory until 1912. It only gained statehood and all its dreary bureaucracy and formal exploitation of what we call resources in 1959. The same year, Kind of Blue was released by Miles Davis. When the United States had won its independence, two-thirds of today's contiguous U.S. belonged to Spain, including the current-day California, Texas, Florida, the whole of the U.S. Gulf Coast, and all the lands we presently call the American Southwest, including Nevada, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. that was the Boxton Frontier, plus the northern strip from the Dakotas west to Washington Territory. And the Southwest was already a content mill for dime novels and fake cowboy songs when Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday roamed the boomtowns looking for action. There are remnants of it, mostly the ruins of the old mining settlements, the old tailings piles, the old toxic waste. Those towns that mostly dried up forever once the silver and gold was pretty much gone. But the magic time, the time of the temporary autonomous zone, was short-lived, like always. We know it from movies and TV, mostly. Tombstone, Deadwood, Pale Rider, High Noon, Stagecoach, etc. But a century ago, before movies had sound or color, there were still Wild West shows playing to big crowds, although they were at the end of their run, too. A fantastic half-century run as some of the biggest entertainment spectacles in history. And lots of still-living legends took part because people have to make a living. And it's generally more fun and more financially rewarding to be a traveling entertainer signing autographs at the fancy restaurant than to be a real Old West sheriff or Indian warlord. So Annie Oakley and Buffalo Bill Cody, Red Eagle and Chief Sitting Bull, and scores of other real or pretend army scouts, Indian sharpshooters, and bronco riding cowboys took to touring, took to the road. First to the population centers on the East Coast, later to the big growing cities of the Midwest and Mississippi Valley, as those former frontier lands settled into cities, suburbs, stockyards, train yards. Like in Chicago, where some 20,000 spectators witnessed the World's Fair run of Buffalo Bill's Wild West show at the 18 and 93 Chicago World's Fair. These traveling extravaganzas traveled the world too, mostly to Europe, where people were as crazy for Old West entertainment as in North America. Queen Victoria enjoyed these various staged outrages. This was the time of the freak show of Joseph Merrick put on display as the Elephant Man. The circus was in town again, back in Empire City. And it wore a cowboy hat. But here's a colorful description. Wild West show acts included a bison hunt, train robbery, Indian war battle, and the usual grand finale of the show, attack on the burning cabin, in which Indians attacked a settler's cabin and were repulsed by Buffalo Bill, cowboys, and Mexicans. The crowds loved the displays of trick riding and trick shooting. And while the last of these traveling spectaculars were bankrupt or were otherwise worn down and wrung out by the early 1920s, much of the culture of traveling Wild West performers and their many animals can still be witnessed at the annual powwows still held by many American tribes today, or on the rodeo circuit. like the mule days they just had up the road in Bishop. It's a great time to be in Bishop, even if you don't go to the fairgrounds, although you should, at least for a couple of hours. It's a great time because the whole town is full of cowboys and cowgirls, and the horse trailers are everywhere, and the ranching families come down from Bridgeport and Adobe Valley and beyond. And visitors can buy tax-free gasoline and marijuana at the Paiute reservations along Highway 395. But the era of the Wild West Spectacular really might have ended when Calamity Jane was fired for the last time in 1902 for her usual transgressions of drinking and fighting. The new cowboys, the pretend cowboys, would learn to behave, learn to obey their paymasters at the movie studios and the corporate suite. Or go back to being a drunk on Sunset Boulevard outside the drugstore, hassling the customers. Some of these Wild West performers even moved into the movies. People like Tom Mix, Will Rogers. But mostly they died off because they had lived out their lives one way or the other, and it wasn't the same world anymore anyway.
Sunday in his Sunday clothes, he beats it for the village where he always goes, and every girl in town is Joe's, cause he's a regular bear. When he starts feeling on the dance hall floor, no one but a lunatic would start a war. The wise men know his 44 makes men dance so fair. He always sings ragged music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in the saddle on a horse that a syncopated gaiter, and there's such a funny meet to the roll of his repeater, how they run when they hear his gun, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin, rootin', shootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe.
One of the richest people on this entire planet sent Captain Kirk up into the cold, dead void of space for real, not so long ago. It was a publicity stunt for a space tourism company. Another expensive plaything for the kind of people who have nothing and no one left to buy. And William Shatner, who has played Captain Kirk for the entirety of my life, and most of yours, if not all of it, well, he brought home the truth. He brought it back to Earth. I saw a cold, dark, black emptiness. Unlike any blackness you can see or feel on Earth. It was deep, enveloping, all-encompassing. I turned back toward the light of home. I could see the curvature of Earth. The beige of the desert. The white of the clouds and the blue of the sky. It was life, nurturing, sustaining life, Mother Earth, and I was leaving her. Everything I had expected to see was wrong. I discovered that the beauty isn't out there, it's down here with all of us. Leaving that behind made my connection to our tiny planet even more profound. It was among the strongest feelings of grief I have ever encountered. The contrast between the vicious coldness of space and the warm nurturing of Earth below filled me with overwhelming sadness. Every day we are confronted with the knowledge of further destruction of Earth at our hands. The actor William Shatner wrote that, following his brief voyage into orbit on a corporate space tourism flight that blasted out of the New Mexico desert, October 13 of 2021. It is, I believe, in a new book that he has written, new as of 2022, anyway. It is called Boldly Go by William Shatner. Amboy to Zyzix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. New soundscapes on this program by the one and only Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And I am your host and editor, janitor, Ken Lane. Listen, radio friends, I've just learned my old friend Mojo Nixon is going to be honored by bipartisan resolution in the Ohio State Legislature, Ohio being where he lived for the last decade of his life, and also where he went to college and earned his political science degree back in 1979. The day after he is honored by the legislature, the Mojo Nixon exhibit will be unveiled at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, because Cleveland rocks. I would love to go, but I'm broke like a lot of us, and I'm still trying to save up enough to pay the printers and the post office to get issue 11 out the door, and I need to straighten up the garage and the shed and get my teeth cleaned and write my will and do something about the roof. Just an endless boring list of chores. Chores I don't care to do at all. But if you are anywhere near the great state of Ohio, or you have a little more freedom than I have at the moment, the public is welcome to attend the legislative session of the, what's it called, the Buckwheat State, if the public is willing to go through a metal detector and such, so allow for some extra time, Tuesday, June 11th at 11 a.m., according to legendary Mojo Nixon manager Bullethead, which is his legal name, I believe, the public can also witness the unveiling of the Mojo Nixon exhibit at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 2 p.m. on Wednesday, June 12. Tell them you're there for the Mojo Nixon unveiling, and they'll point you in the right direction or call security or whatever. Among the rare objects on display for the first time will be Mojo's Dean Martin embossed Guild Starfire guitar. The original handwritten lyrics to Elvis Is Everywhere and the Mojo TV prop he used to wear on his fool head. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Well, have you had a good Father's Day weekend? I was curious about some of our wild dads. You know, the feathered, finned, and four-footed kind. Well, Birds and Blooms put out a little article about the best of bird dads, and so we're going to start with that. Birds and Blooms Best Incubator Award goes to the Northern Flicker. Northern Flicker fathers do the heavy lifting when it comes to keeping the eggs warm. Their incubating duties leave them sitting on eggs all night long and half the day as well. The Best Provider Dad Award goes to a snowy owl. While a snowy owl mom is busy with the nestlings, the dad brings in food to keep everybody fed. If it's been a particularly good year, he may leave a large stockpile of dead lemmings and other rodents around the nest. And as far as birds go, the best all-around parent is the sandhill crane. Not only do male sandhill cranes help with nest building and incubation and feeding their young, but families stick together through fall migration, winter, and the beginning of spring migration. Young cranes learn and benefit from both parents. Also from Birds and Blooms for the Bird Dad Awards, the best builder goes to the male house wren. The male house wren is serious about nest building because it helps him attract a mate. He starts constructing a few nests at once, and his female partner chooses the most promising one and finishes it. So I have one more bird father we can look at, and this is from Nature A Day at a Time, An Uncommon Look at Common Wildlife by Kathy Katz. And she writes that mating in the animal kingdom is not solely for reproduction. Kestrels may mate 500 to 700 times for one clutch of eggs. For a few months during courtship, breeding, and incubation, male and female kestrels have marked divisions of chores. The female always stays near the nest, while the male stalks the hunting grounds for food, which he brings to his mate. This routine of hunting and receiving begins long before incubation, while the female is still able to hunt for herself. If you go to treehugger.com, there's an article called Nature's 10 Best Animal Dads. And this one is kind of going all over the world, but the last one you might recognize from something local. Okay, let's begin. Number one, seahorses. Seahorses are unique because they belong to the fish family. I'm going to try to say this. Cynathidae, a family characterized by male pregnancy. Male seahorses have a pouch where females deposit their eggs. Once deposited, the male fertilizes the eggs and incubates them for a period of up to 45 days until they emerge as fully developed little seahorses. Seahorse fathers have a distended stomach during pregnancy and even experience contractions as they give birth. Scientific American writes, "It is unknown why seahorses have this sex reversal when it comes to procreation, but one idea is that having the male bear young leaves the female free to start producing the next batch of eggs." Second on their list is marmosets. Sure, the small and furry tree-dwelling primates known as marmosets are outrageously cute, but male marmosets also take their roles as fathers very seriously. With the help of other family members, including older siblings, the typical marmoset dad grooms, feeds, and gives piggyback rides to his infant children while the marmoset mom steps away and takes on a decidedly disinterested parenting role after a few weeks. Marmoset fathers will also act as attentive midwives during the birth of their newborns, going as far as to clean up the afterbirth and bite off the umbilical cord. Jeff French, primatologist at the University of Nebraska Zoo, tells National Geographic that one reason the marmoset dad is so involved is because of the tremendous physical strain put on the expectant mother. It's like a 120-pound woman giving birth to a 30-pound baby, explains French. Next on the list is jackanaws. Male jackanaws do all the hard work of making the nests, incubating the eggs, and caring for the chicks, while female jackanaws gallivant around and mate with as many males as they can. The males make for loyal homemakers, even choosing to stay with the nest long after females have left on their migration. Oh, that reminds me of some Dr. Seuss story or something. Well, anyway, they're such loyal fathers that they will even care for eggs fertilized by other males. Females will occasionally help out to scare away predators, but otherwise enjoy building harems of up to 5 males. Next on the list is arowanas, or maybe it's arowanas. Anyway, father arowanas exhibit some of the most extensive paternal care among fish. Aside from building nests for their young and protecting them after they hatch, arowanas are also notable for being mouth brooders, carrying their marble-like eggs in their mouths until they hatch. But even after hatching, arowana fathers continue to harbor hundreds of baby fish in their mouths, letting them out only on occasion to explore. However, the dad always takes special care to seek out each one of his offspring and suck them back into his mouth to keep them safe from predators. Next up are emperor penguins. There are few examples in nature of a father more dedicated to their offspring than the emperor penguin. After the female lays an egg, her nutritional reserves become depleted and she must return to feed in the ocean for 2 months. This leaves the responsibility of keeping the egg warm through the freezing Antarctic winter to the father. The emperor penguin dad spends 2 months holding the egg precariously between the tops of his feet and his brooding pouch. Throughout the brutal winter, when freezing winds can reach 120 miles an hour, the father doesn't eat anything, dedicating all his time to incubating the egg. The next entry or award winner is the rhea. Much like the emperor penguin, the rhea is a large flightless species of bird from South America in which the males dutifully incubate the female's eggs until they hatch. However, the male rhea, an ostrich look-alike and member of the ratite family, is polygamous, courting up to 12 females at a time. Despite their wandering eyes and many mates, male rheas never abandon their offspring. In addition to incubating as many as 50 eggs at a time for 6 weeks, the rhea father is in charge of nest building and it's responsible for raising the chicks for the first 6 months without any assistance from the mothers. Sadly, these birds are considered near threatened by the International Union for Conservation of Nature due to habitat loss driven by cattle ranching. And then we have lump suckers. They may not be the prettiest of animals, but little lump suckers are always beautiful in their father's eyes. Lump sucker fathers are particularly notable for their dedication to looking over their brood until the eggs hatch. The father uses his modified pelvic fins, which have essentially evolved into suction cups, to glue himself to a surface near the eggs. Then he sits and watches over his spawn until they hatch. He aerates the eggs by waving his fins over them to provide oxygen. Predators such as crabs, sea stars, and small fish are met with a fierce display of protectiveness if any attempt is made to harm the eggs. Next on the list are frogs. Perhaps no group of animals contains so many dedicated fathers as frogs and toads. There are frog fathers that carry their tadpoles in their mouths, often refusing to eat until the tadpoles are old enough to survive on their own. Other frog fathers embed their spawn inside their skin, often on their backs or legs, such as with the aptly named midwife toad. In one frog species, called the pouched frog, males even have a specialized pouch to carry their young while they mature, just like female marsupials. And then we have giant water bugs. Those aren't ordinary lumps on the back of the male water bug. Those are his children. Giant water bugs display the most dedicated paternal care in the insect world by carrying eggs on their wings until they hatch. Sometimes they carry as many as 150 eggs for a week at a time. You'll want to avoid messing with a water bug father because he can deliver one of the most painful bites among insects, which explains why this bug is sometimes called a toe biter. For those dads, it's all about protecting themselves and their eggs. And finally, bringing it all home locally, we have wolves. Despite their fearsome reputation as apex predators, male wolves are attentive, monogamous, and fiercely protective dads that live with their mates for life. A wolf pack is a family group made up of a male and female pair and their cubs. After a female wolf gives birth, she sticks close to her helpless pups and doesn't leave her den for several weeks. Meanwhile, the dad stands guard and hunts for food to share with his new family, since pups can start eating meat at 3 weeks old. Whereas a female wolf will regurgitate meat to share with a litter, the dad will provide entire pieces of fresh kill. As a young pup grows, the dad takes on the role of a stern but sometimes playful mentor, helping integrate the pup into the pack. My thanks to treehugger.com for all that information. I wanted to talk to you about a couple events coming up by some of our nonprofits in the region. First is the Valley of Flowers chapter of Montana Native Plant Society on Saturday, June 22nd from 9 a.m. to noon. They are going to do the flora of Lewis and Clark Cavern State Park over in Three Forks. It says park at the visitor center and meet there for a 2-mile meander with Robin Klein. Bring your 10 times plant lens. Find them at the MSU Student Union bookstore if you don't have one. And if you have it, the Manual of Montana Vascular Plants by Peter Lesica. Also bring a lunch and water, sun hat, and wear long pants and sturdy shoes. You can sign up with Robin at herbrobin at gmail.com, or you can text her at 406-600-1712. Tin Works Arts Season is open now at 719 North Ida and Cottonwood in Bozeman. Tin Works' current exhibitions are Wheat Field and Inspiration, The Seed is in the Ground, and The Lay of the Land, an exhibition of artworks inspired by the land of the American West, featuring artists Agnes Dennis, James Castle, Lucy Raven, Stephen Shore, Laylee Long Soldier, Robbie Wing, and artist-in-residence Wills Brewer. And you might want to make note of this coming up on Saturday, July 6th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, July 7th at 7:30 p.m. is Roots in the Sky, The End of Rain. Montana's premier chamber choir, Roots in the Sky, will present two nights of performances of Scott Ordway's The End of Rain. These will be performed in the Asterisms installation at Tin Works Art, and you will need tickets. You can go to info@tinworksart.org to get more information, to get tickets, and to find out about the workshops and other events coming up this summer at Tin Works Art. My thanks to Ken Lane for his continuing work on Desert Oracle Radio. Our sounds today came from the Highlight Reservoir and the east and west forks of Highlight Creek, as well as the Cherry River Access. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening today. You can leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. My thanks to Paul Simon for his song Father and Daughter to take us out. Don't we all wish we had a dad like that? Well, here's to all the loving dads, bonus dads, and father figures of sons and daughters. I'll see you next week. Until then, stay well and sweet.
If you leap awake in the mirror of a bad dream, and for a fraction of a second you can't remember where you are, just open your window and follow your memory upstream to the meadow in the mountain where we counted every falling star. I believe the light that shines on you will shine on you forever. And though I can't guarantee there's nothing scary hiding under your bed, I'm gonna stand guard like a postcard of a golden retriever, and never leave till I leave you with a sweet dream in your head. I'm gonna watch you shine, gonna watch you grow, gonna paint a sign so you'll always know. As long as one and one is two, there could never be a father loved his daughter more than I love you. Trust your intuition, it's just like going fishing. You cast your line and hope you get a bite, but you don't need to waste your time worrying about the marketplace. Try to help the human race. Struggling to survive its harshest night. I'm gonna watch you shine, gonna watch you grow. Gonna paint a sign so you'll always know. As long as one and one is two, there could never be a father loved his daughter more than I love. As long as